Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Chabi. I'm part of the Rhizomatica project. What I'm going to talk about today is basically what we did in the last year. What is the concept of building a community cell phone network? And, well, what's the current status, where we want to go next, and some stories, and how we managed to do the entire thing, not only from a technical point of view, but also from a social and legal. Okay, this is a short introduction, because everyone asked me, what is a rhizome? So it has a bit of philosophical meaning. It means, well, it means different things. You can read it up. In practice, a rhizome is a structure where there is no central point of management and where the entire network grows by itself in an organic way, which is the way we are trying to introduce mobile phone networks, but not as a service provider, but as a, I don't know, facilitator to make sure that the community can actually run it themselves. So basically, this is what is Rhizomatica, or at least, okay, we're never gonna get it all of it. But the main idea was that even though the modern world is full of telecommunications, and in every part of the world, or almost, you can find mobile networks, internet, whatever, over 2 billion people in the world don't actually have affordable coverage. So you have a phone network, but no one can use it. And you also have 700 million which don't have it at all. How we want to do that? It's basically that, yeah, we want to support and promote technology that reinforce community values. Should I read it? No, you can read it.
Okay.
We support and promote technologies that reinforce community values like cooperation, trust, and commitment. In many instances, technology is a vehicle for introducing market logic and automation in the developing world. We are aware of the role mobile communications play in this process, generally privileging one-to-one communication. And so we strive to put incipient technology at the service of rural and indigenous communities in ways that reinforce their values and ways of association. We fully support and use open source technology, and we plan to release the entire software platform for everyone to hack on it and be able to deploy community-based cell phone networks worldwide. Okay, fancy. Okay, how to do that? Because I didn't have a standard plan to present, I basically stick to the camp. So observe, hack, make, and no profit, because, yeah, we're no profit. So we're not going to make much money out of it. If we can live off it, that's going to be cool, but we're not there yet. But basically, observe means we wanted to provide the service to these communities, which, have you seen in the video, they're not the stereotype of the indigenous community that doesn't want any kind of technology. They actually have everything. They have roads, electricity, internet. They got everything, but they don't get any network coverage. And that's because a variety of reasons. For example, the first reason is the fact that in Mexico, there is one company which has the de facto monopoly, which is Telcel, which is owned by this guy called Carlos Slim. You probably heard of him before. Richest man in the world?
Movistar.
No. Movistar is Telefonica. Spanish. Yeah. No. But so basically, the idea was there is a de facto monopoly. This monopoly means that small villages and rural communities don't get any kind of coverage because supposedly, from their calculation, if your village is less than 5,000 people, they won't even come there. So you have villages that have been struggling for more than 10 years to get any kind of coverage, and they don't get anything at all because they're too small. The village where we started, it's 2,500 people, and it's the biggest one we're going to cover. Everything else is going to be smaller and smaller and smaller. So, by observing reality, we found out two things that could allow us to build it. The first one is the second law of the Mexican Constitution, comma 6, which says that communication and telecommunication, it's a fundamental right of the indigenous communities. It also means that basically the state itself needs to extend the right of the network of communication and telecommunication and put conditions so that the all the villages and the communities can basically acquire, operate, and manage their own ways of communication, and well, by following the law, blah blah blah. The law of telecommunications also says that if a community cannot get a proper service from a commercial operator, they can request their own licenses. They can get a part of the spectrum and they can manage it. This situation is probably quite unique in the world because you don't get many places where you actually have free spectrum because you have a monopoly. So there are like three phone providers and all the spectrum has never been fully allocated. And you have a law that allows you to actually get the license for free for community usage. What else? The communities where we are operating in Oaxaca, they use a system of government called Usos y Costumbres, use and customs, something like that, where they basically don't manage themselves the way we do in terms of party and elections, but they have a town assembly, and the assembly decides every year, every part of the society, who are the people who are going to take this roles. So for example, the mayor, the presidente, change every year, is elected by the same municipality, and every position of, I don't know, power in the entire town is actually rotated. So during your life, you, at one point, you're going to do all of them. Which means that we're already talking about a community that manages itself using a system that works. So the idea of having a mobile network which is self-managed, it's not absurd. Actually, for them, it's natural. I mean, they already manage themselves, their forest, their water, the plantation, the roads, buildings, everything. One more, one less doesn't really make a big change. What else? In the last 3-4 years, there was an emergence. There was basically a new revolution in GSM technology with the appearance of low-cost and open-source software and platforms which allow you to deploy GSM networks which are a tenth or a twentieth of a cost of a normal GSM base station. So, I mean, in terms of mobile operators, a normal cell, it's what, $100,000, $150,000? We paid $10,000. So, I mean, we are scaling down the price to the point where even the community itself can actually buy the cell and get the money back in 1 year, 1 year and a half. Last, but not least important thing, is the fact that in many parts of the world, even where they don't have phone coverage, they have mobile phones. Which sounds a bit like an absurdity, but it's true. Because nowadays a mobile phone is basically a cheap replacement for a computer. So even if you don't have the network, you can still take pictures, videos, you can do a bunch of stuff with your phone, which is a kind of replacement for a computer that you cannot afford. So, I don't know. The funny thing is that when we turned on the network the first time, there were 400 mobile phones in a village, which doesn't have any coverage. And now we are around 600 users and another 400 which are waiting because we are saturated. So, basically, that was the first step. I wasn't part of it. I didn't do this job. I don't take the credit for it. I came in this part. This part means you want to set up a network. You find out that there is a law. You could actually do it legally. Funny thing is, this law has never been applied for mobile networks. We are the first, project who is actually applying for GSM licenses in Mexico. So the law is there since 1917. But we are the first one who actually got the spectrum assigned. And that was probably the biggest hack of all. Because as far as I know, worldwide, there are no, community-based GSM networks. Or if there are, they are not licensed. I have a couple of examples, but I'll show it later. The second hack was on the social level. as in to present the network not as a business, not as a service provider, but as something that the entire community is going to manage by itself. So we're not coming to sell you, we're not going there to sell you something. We're coming to help you develop your own technology and be able at one point to actually manage it also from a technical point of view. At the beginning, of course, it's impossible, but we try to make sure that every single action they need to do, they can do it without us. They only call us if something breaks, which happened, but. The third act was the technical part, as in, I never worked with GSM before. It sounded cool, I said, ooh, okay, let's do it. But, I mean, yeah, it was kind of interesting. I'll show you some other stuff. I'm going fast because this is the boring part. After we can actually see pictures, you can ask me a question, I can explain it later, but make is the step which we haven't done yet, but we're going to do as soon as I go back, so from September on. So basically the current status is we got the license, but it's only for 2 years. It's 4 megahertz of spectrum, so plenty, and it's experimental. So we can basically carpet the entire state with base station, but we don't have it assigned permanently. So the next hack is going to actually make a civil association, which include us, the communities which are already running a network, and the ones which are interested in it. When we have a civil association, so a legal entity, we can then request permanent use of the spectrum, non-commercial, and get the licenses for free. This is going to be probably working. I mean, we're not sure, but in Mexico, you're never sure of anything, but up until now, it worked. And well, that's it. From a social point of view, we need to work on a model to actually manage the network in a decentralized way. So we want to make sure that each community is independent. They can do their own choices. They can even decide on how much a call costs, or if there is any cost at all, how much they want to pay per month, the rates, whatever. They can decide everything. We are just the people who deal with the technical part, but the entire management of the network itself is made by them. I mean, one good example was that when we first presented the network and we explained that we only had 12 RFCN, so 12 voice slot, so it wouldn't be enough for everyone to call all day, they proposed to us to just cut all the internal calls to 5 minutes. And the reason was, if you need to talk for more than 5 minutes, you can just get out, go to your friend's house, meet at the bar, whatever, and talk. If it's less than 5 minutes, you can call. Made perfect sense, and it actually saved us a lot of trouble. Technical part is build a working, distributed, statewide GSM network. And this is where it gets sticky. As in, the entire technical team at the moment is me. So we are actually looking for more people to join, and we are working on a common platform with other people. So basically, for all the nerds out here, so everyone, this is what we're using technically. As in, the cell, it's based on OpenBTS. The current SIP PBX is an Asterisk, but we want to replace it with free switch in the future, because Asterisk get complicated very quickly and it's ugly, but that's what we got. The hardware we are using now was kindly lended to us by Range Networks. At one point we need to pay it, of course, but that was what actually allowed us to start the project in the first place, so thank you. I don't know if there is anyone around. What we are trying to do now is to actually experiment a lot more with Sismocom and Fairwaves hardware, which are two other manufacturers, both based on the OpenBSC platform. If anyone knows, no? Well, basically, the main problem we have is not to scale up, as in Range Networks provide good hardware. It's kind of expensive, but it works. They ship you a 2U rack, you turn it on, you have a network. Well, no, not really, but something like that. The main problem we have is how to scale down the hardware to a price where even tiny communities can afford it to buy it and get the money back in maximum 2-3 years. So what we're trying to do now is to basically mix and match different components, different BTS. There is even the possibility of build our own transmitter at one point. But yeah, main problem now is we need to scale down. And we don't have an RF engineer. So everyone, if anyone wants to come to Mexico for a couple of months and help us, that would be great. What we're also doing is to basically build a common platform, not only in terms of software, but the entire distribution. So, I don't know, build a tool chain, something that we can share. So if someone else wants to replicate our job, they don't have to start from scratch again, but they can just run one script, install an SD card or a USB or whatever, and get the entire system up and running in 10 minutes. That, it's almost done. And the nice thing is that we found out a couple of months ago that we are actually not alone, as in we are not the only project who's trying to do that. We met with some cool people from the TIRE group, University of California. TIRE stands from, telecommunication something for emerging. You can look it up. There is a link, you'll find out. But basically what they did, it's something is even more crazy than what we did, because they installed a base station in the island of Papua, Indonesia, in a place where there is no electricity, no roads, you can only get there by plane. And they had no poles to put the entire thing, so they just climb up a very, 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 very big tree and stick it there. The BTS works in the day because they have power, and it basically goes in standby during the night because there is no power. And they have some fantastic ways of handling traffic via a VSAT connection. The main difference between them and us is that we are building private networks. So we don't have actually global routable numbers. So if you want to call the village, you basically call it the ID, and then you get the automated system, and then you call the extension. They wanted to get real numbers. And the only place where they could get them was in Sweden. So they now have Swedish SIM cards in Indonesia. And they can send messages to each other and outside at a premium. But they're very happy about it. Well, that was the only way to actually get number. Because they were so interested in what we were doing, they actually visited us in Mexico last month. So we're now basically working on a group. As one of the guys said, when you're doing something alone, you feel really alone. When you find out that there is someone else, you make a club. And because we are the only two, we decided to, well, at least let's not replicate the work. And so now that's what we're trying to do, to build a common platform where we can base our network and their network at the same time, use the same software, use the same platform, use the same scripts, everything, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel for the 1,000th time again. Ah, okay. That was the technical boring part, all white on black, so that's done. Any questions?
Thank you. Quick question for you. So, by the way, TIRE actually uses range networks, apparently, for doing a lot of this stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, they just did a press release on that. Very cool. Secondly, are you guys using, have you guys enabled it for GPRS data or SMS amongst private numbers in New Mexico setup, like data services on the cell phone?
Well, the service we provide is only voice and SMS. And the only thing that can go in and out is only voice. We don't provide SMS services outside of the village. When we're going to expand the network between different villages, they will be able to communicate via SMS, but we don't have a gateway and we don't have any idea on getting publicly routable numbers. So at the moment, the only way is to call in and out. For data, Yes, theoretically we could provide that, but in practice we don't have enough capacity.
Why globally routable numbers for SMS? You could make a little header that is human readable, and SMS to a number, and inside the SMS, the first few characters are the routing. So people could SMS to the one number, and it could get routed to the person.
Yes, we actually thought about something like that, but the thing is the complexity to implement this system and the fact that you also need to explain it to everyone, and not only the people living in the village, but you need to explain to the people living outside of the village, and you need to tell them that to reach you, they need to send the message to another number and then put in the header the destination number. It's not going to work. I mean, we're trying to think in terms of usability. At the moment, people are not complaining much. The cool thing is the fact that because we're connected to a VoIP provider, wholesale, reseller, something, we actually get very, very, very cheap rates in terms of calls. So the entire idea of I'll send you an SMS because calling is expensive, it's completely gone. I mean, one example is the fact that if you call from the village to the United States, where most of the people emigrate to work, if you call from the phone booth, it's 15 pesos per minute, which is almost 1 euro, which is a lot of money. If you call from the mobile phone, it's 20 cents of pesos. So it's 75 times less. And the fact that we also registered some DID numbers in Mexico and in the US. So if you're living in the same city, you just do a local call, which is free, and you receive the call directly in the village for free, completely. So that was one of the main points, not only to provide the service, but to basically exploit every possible technology which exists. So we don't want to connect to the local telecom. I mean, we already know them, and that's why we're trying to avoid them as much as possible. Which is why we're probably not going to do any SS7 interconnection, not until much later, and we don't want to integrate. We just want to create autonomous networks that can communicate in and out, but that's it.
Any other questions from the audience?
Is there any E911 regulation or something along those lines that provides, you have to provide location service for the cell if they call an emergency number?
Not yet. I mean, it's all supported. We have looked into it, but at the moment we have one cell in one village.
That might be one way that government uses to go after you.
No, because officially we are not operating a public service. This is a private network. And that's why we got the licenses for free, because it's a private network for a specific community and it's not considered like public service. Simple as that.
Okay.
Okay, so...
One more question over here.
Could you possibly trick this thing into getting other communities to inject money into the non-profit by using the cheap rates?
Yes, actually. I haven't explained the business model. That's a problem. The business model is we don't own the network. We don't own anything. The community itself buys the equipment. They ask us what we need to buy. You contact this manufacturer, you order this BTS antenna cable, whatever, you pay for it. We install it. We ask for a maintenance fee, which is going to be like 10-15% of the income of the network. But the entire ownership is of the village. That's why I was talking about scaling down. The fact is, we need to find a way to produce hardware or assemble it or get something which is so cheap that even a tiny community of 300 people can buy it. Because we don't own anything. We just manage it in a way, but we want to make the communities as independent and autonomous as possible. Because they are already autonomous, we don't want to actually connect them to something. And yeah, basically the point is, for example, with this village, we got the BTS They lend it to us, we install it. After 6 months, we ask them, so you want to keep it or should we ship it back? And they said, no, we want it, but this one is not enough. So they bought the bigger version of it. And we calculated that by asking 50 pesos a month per person, which is €3, they should get back all the money they invested into it in 1 year and 3 months. After that, they can decide that there is no point in paying a fee anymore, or they can reduce the fee to the bare minimum just for electricity and internet, or they can just decide that, you know what, free calls for everyone, fuck it. It's their choice, basically.
But they also can decide to put a higher price to coal. I mean, not free, but doing actually the contrary.
Well, the model is local calls and messages are free. You pay a monthly subscription, and that is free by definition because you're not passing any transit. You're not using anyone else's network. It's yours. And that's the idea. If you're calling outside, of course, there is a kind of top-up method. And this one can be made where you just pay the rate as it is for the VoIP provider, or you can put a 20% on top of it, whatever. The thing is, it's a public assembly. The entire village decide for it. So whatever happened with this money, I don't know. It's not so easy to actually steal money or raise the prices or whatever, because the entire village is deciding about it. It's basically us sitting in this room and deciding that we want to put the rate. We discuss for it for 10 hours. And
one more question here in the back.
How was the reaction of the government and this other telephone company in Mexico on your project?
That's interesting. The government, they were more than happy to give us the license. And the actual words were, we're so happy that you're doing the job that we were supposed to do. Because that's the thing. I mean, the Mexican government actually has funds for the development of the indigenous communities, which never get released, and they have absolute restriction. For example, the fact that they don't give you funds if you're not big, smaller, no, if you are only 5,000 people or more. So if you're a tiny village, you won't get any money. And if you're a big village, normally you don't need money because you're big already. So the government was totally fine with it. The other companies, they are already trying to mess up things a bit. As in, we already got a visit from people from Telcel, which came and said, ah, I see that you have a cell now. We can even install more telephone. No, that's not your cell, and you can go away now. But as we are now, we're not really stealing any market to anyone, because this market didn't exist before. No one wanted to build network in these places. So what we are doing is opening a totally non-existing market. So, I mean, we're not doing any competition. They can keep all the cities, they can keep the large areas, they can keep all the parts where you make shitloads of money on density and additional service, internet, whatever. We work on the tiny communities, period. And if they really, really want to install a network, well, good for us, for them, and for the communities, because finally we managed to move a fucking giant and push them to build the infrastructure they never built. So in any case, even if they start to make a competition against us, we won. Because the entire point of the project is not to make money for us, but to offer coverage to everyone. If we do it, or if the big telecom does it, no problem. I mean, as long as they do it. If they don't, we do it. Well, more or less, that's it. Now some fancy picture. For example, this is the initial setup. This is the roof of a house. The BTS is actually sitting on a table in the living room of an apartment. This is me. And this is the antenna. Because we didn't actually have a proper mast and stuff, it's basically 10 meters of aluminum, two pieces, bolted together with tensors of Pildiferro? Basically metal wire. So the entire thing is the next level after duct tape. It actually went down twice. They put it back together and they told me, don't worry, this time it's not going to fall. Why? Double metal wire. Cool. It's true. In 6 months, it actually stayed up. I need a break. This is our first user who registered to the network. He actually went to the municipality, paid the 15 pesos, got his receipt, went to the radio, and they activated the thing. This is the stakeholder meeting, or the public assembly, which was where we presented the project, we explained how it works, which was where they decided that there was the 5 minutes limit, they decided about a bunch of things, and yeah, it basically works like that. You expose your idea, they discuss, you try to get some mediation, you keep talking and talking and talking and talking until everyone expresses their opinion, and then you go by consensus, which is not really scalable in terms of big communities, but for a village it works fantastically, especially for effect. When the entire assembly decides something, everyone agrees about it, which means that later you cannot change your opinion because you...
I once went to a reading of the... It was not exactly a reading because it's not written, but there are mnemonic systems of the big law of the peace of the Iroquois by a Mohawk traditional council. So my son had to be back in school, and I said, well, you know, how long do you plan to go at it? And the guy looked at me like I was kind of dumb or something. And he's like, what do you mean? Yeah, when do you intend to finish? Well, when we finish.
Yeah. That's an important point. We're done when we're done. I mean, I've seen one of the big, big assembly where you had 1,000 men in one room sitting there for 11 hours and discussing the entire fucking politics of the village, which means everything. Funny thing is, we were the last one to expose the thing. So when we got into the room, everyone was already like, no, fuck. Even then, they first said, no, we want the bigger networks. Then they discussed about it. Then they spent another half an hour, 1 hour, getting everyone to agree on it. And then they said, yeah, sure, we'll buy the new one. This is the money. Go ahead. Even after 12 hours by that point. And it's Mexico. It's hot, sweaty, you know. Let me see. Yes, this is one typical use case. What you see here at the end, this is the actual village. The transmitter is installed more or less here. And this is the field, which is, I don't know, 4 or 5 kilometers away, where all the growers go to work their land. And they were really, really, really happy about the fact that if they forget something at home, they don't have to walk 4 kilometers back to get it. They can actually call at home and send me one of the kids. They were so happy about it that they actually gave me a lot of mezcal as a present because they finally got proper coverage and they didn't have to walk around all the day. If you never tried mezcal, you should. Okay. So, yeah. Basically, that's the status now. What's next is reduce deployment costs, expand the network to the next 150 communities. And 150 is actually the communities that already contacted us. So we actually have a list of names and people and places that we need to visit, discuss with the assembly. There's a lot of work to do. And the thing is, you can build a system where the actual technical deployment is quick, easy, whatever, but to actually get into the community and have the local assembly approve the project, that normally takes weeks or months. So it's gonna be a long, long, long walk. The other thing we want to do is to actually build a working, repeatable model, not all, well, including software, but mostly including, mostly about the actual organization. As in the idea that you can build mobile networks by yourself, you can manage it yourself, and with a bit of luck and a good lawyer, you can actually get the licenses. And you can basically build something that, as far as we know, doesn't exist yet. Yes, and the next thing is, I have some t-shirts to sell, and we are basically broke, and I've been working with my savings for the past year, so if you have something to share, great. The t-shirts are these, and they've been made in Mexico, and the texture is Mexican. So they're not that great, but, I mean, we only made 50 of them, so they're really, really rare. And 10 years from now, you can say, I was the first one to buy a t-shirt. Okay, thanks to Peter, who is the guy who actually came up with the entire idea. and it's so crazy that he went forward and implemented it. Eric, who is the lawyer who did all the intricate work of getting into the telecommunication system in Mexico, and it's not easy, but he got it. Tele, who's my friend, who actually built an entire web interface for the system in 1 month alone. At one point, I didn't even have to tell him what to do anymore. It just went on its own. 2 weeks later, there was the entire thing, flashy graphs, Ajax, everything. And I was like, cool. And yeah, he's been working for like 10 years in telecommunication, so he's the one who is actually helping me out most. Shadi, Kashif, and Curtis, which are the three guys from the Tire project in Berkeley who visited us, and they are the people we are working with at the moment to build the common platform. The village of Talea, which where we installed the first network, and all the people who are going to support us or our friends, including you. Pa-pa-pa, what's the last one? Yeah, some links. I'll post the presentation somewhere on the wiki, maybe.
Yeah, you can give it to the media group who's here in the blue van and then can put it on the website.
I will. How much time I have left? Oh, plenty. And yeah, and that's the last one.
Thank you very much. So are there any more questions from the audience now? Because if not, I have one myself. I was wondering, so this network, if you look at the current networks we're using here, more and more people are starting to call their mobile phone their tracking device and their little spy they have in their pocket all the time. And apart from having a great network and maybe 3G here, it also has some costs in privacy issues. And somehow this seems to solve some of those problems as well. Is that the case? Can you locate people's locations? Is there something built in there, or is it privacy by design?
Well, at the moment, we're going to install only single cell networks. So it means that from a single cell, you can only know the average radius, but you cannot triangulate. So you can only know if the guy is in the village or not, and is more or less in, I don't know, 500 meters, 1 kilometers, 2 kilometers, something like that. You cannot locate precisely. Second thing is all the data about the network itself sits on the machine, which is in the community. There is no network operator involvement. So they will manage their own data. And because it's a private network, I don't even think we have to do any lawful interception or anything like that, because it's a private network. I mean,
so just like I said, there are some more values in there that are maybe...
Yeah, that's another value. On the other side, you never know who's going to access. I mean, the thing... Okay, I'll show you.
Imagine. Yeah, show us what it gives.
This is actually the web interface currently running. So we have a bunch of fancy things. So for example, these are the users with IMSI, caller ID, balance, number, when it has been activated, blah, blah, blah. We also have, for example, the entire CDR database. So if you want, you can see who called who, duration, what happened, bunch of things. We are trying to think of a working model on who is going to access this data and if they're a person that we can trust or not. But then again, at the end, this interface is available to me, two other people, and the guys from the village. What they do with the data is their... Well, it's not a problem. It's their decision in the sense that, for example, if the assembly decide that on rotation, everyone has to maintain the network. At one point, everyone will have access to this data. We can either ask them if they really want this data, because from a management point of view, there is no need to access all the call logs. So we could just remove it from the web interface or put it under a password base something. Depends. I mean, we didn't really think about that implication yet. At the moment, there are two people in the village which can access the web interface. They're trusted. And what they want to do with this, it's their choice. They decide, we implement it.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Very clear answer. Well, any more? Because, oh, okay. Just keep it brief. The next speaker's already waiting.
Oh, okay. Sure? Okay. Well, anyway, the thing about privacy in a small community like that is they're not as paranoid about this as everybody else is. So perhaps they care a lot less about privacy than you do.
Oh, that was response to me. Yeah, but I was just saying that I think that there, when it's a success, that it could be very valuable outside of these communities and solve some problems that we're facing maybe here if we can run our own network like this.
Yeah, well, the main point is if we can expand enough to actually cover a big part of the state, at one point we become an alternative network, but with no control and no restrictions.
That solves some of our first world problems, I guess.
Yes. Only problem is you cannot do it in Europe. Sorry.
But yes, law.
Anyway.
Thank questions? You very much. Otherwise, oh, there's one more question there. I'll come over here. Here.
Where can we find the t-shirts?
If you come to the Italian embassy, which sits in front of here, you can...
No, over there.
There. somewhere around. You can get the t-shirts. And we also have some grappa. So pass by. We're going to have parties and stuff.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you very much.